Hello, this is the podcast for our class today, which was August 30th, and it's class number 3. I'm not counting our first class, which was the orientation session. And we're talking now about the element of breach. Remember, duty breach, cause, proximate cause, and damages for a cause of action of negligence. Now we're talking about breach. What's our standard of care? And how can we say that it wasn't met? And as we talked last class, our standard of care in a negligence case is reasonable care. And the whole issue of what we'll be talking about for the next couple of classes is how do you prove reasonable, you know, what is reasonable care and how do you prove it? Remember, reasonable care is to just behave as a reasonably prudent person would do and avoid unreasonable risks. And in our last class, Adam C. Bullock, they talked about how to define what an unreasonable risk is. You don't have to take extraordinary caution, just ordinary caution. These are questions, since it's the ordinary person standard, the court deems that a jury can make the decision, but the judge has to always give the jury instruction about what the standard is and then determine in advance whether there are enough facts to allow a reasonable jury to decide either way. Remember, if there aren't enough facts here, the defendant will make a motion for summary judgment saying no facts are in dispute, and since there are no facts in dispute, they're overwhelmingly in favor of the defendant, so no jury could decide in favor of the plaintiff. Remember, that's generally always we're talking about some kind of summary judgment motion. So again, we're looking at trying to instruct the jury, trying to put a handle on this notion of reasonable care. What's reasonable care? And beyond just these platitudes. So U.S. v. Carroll Towing there, Judge Learned Hand famously gives his hand formula in an effort to somehow quantify, to make it the jury able to give a definite decision on whether someone behaved unreasonably or not. And this quantification focuses primarily, but not exclusively, on economic considerations. That is, what would it have cost to avoid the accident? How likely is it that this accident would occur? And if the accident does occur, what are the likely costs of the accident? So it all comes down to cost, which is very frequently all what we're looking at. But Learned Hand here has really put it into a formula, which makes some people very comfortable, but mostly points out the very, very difficult aspects of trying to formularize our notion of reasonable care. And at the best, you should take this as sort of informal guidelines. The only person who ever really uses this hand formula is Judge Richard Posner, and you've seen in the writings that he really loves it. Why? Why? Because he's very much concerned with economics as the sole basis for our tort system. And so the hand formula is sort of fits into his world viewpoint very easily. Again, you shouldn't. You should look on the hand formula as just another tool, but certainly, used in its rigid way, it doesn't really apply equally to physical injuries as opposed to property damage, and in many ways, certainly doesn't promote safety. Of course, the reason to have a formula at all, of course, is to just give certainty, to help give certainty to your jury instruction. And in the long run, it doesn't work out all that well. But using this economic viewpoint isn't such a bad idea in order to determine whether somebody should have done more rather than could have done more. Remember, we're just looking at when does a could have become a should have? When does this untaken precaution, what does it make it unreasonable not to have taken that precaution? So we know our standard of care is reasonableness. What does that mean? Is it an objective or subjective standard? Well, as we talked about, it's certainly objective. It's reasonable care under the circumstances, and the circumstances can be very flexible. So the old notion of having common carriers have a much higher standard, extraordinary care, so that they could never meet it, was certainly changed, reasonable care under the circumstances, and the fact that they're common carriers and a lot of people ride them and may have opportunity to interfere with the running of them, just as one of the circumstances. So the Bethel case illustrates how reasonable care under the circumstances can be very flexible. We don't need to have a different standard for different defendants. Also be aware that the reasonable person means is an external standard, and it's conduct, reasonable conduct, not reasonable mentality. Individual circumstances are factored in when we're talking about a reasonable blind person, so physical disabilities are compared with each other, children are compared with each other, unreasonable child of a certain age. The big exception is mental disabilities, and the court is reluctant to set a different standard for those. There, certainly, as people pointed out, you can be wary that many mental disabilities could be feigned, and they're also very, very concerned that if our defendant, we've got an injured defendant and a mentally disabled, an injured plaintiff, and a mentally disabled defendant, why should the defendant suffer here? So again, it's external standards, and sometimes, as in mental defendant, the defendant can't control themselves, but if we have to make a choice, they're going to go in favor of the injured plaintiff. Then we turn to the twin cases, Goodman and Pecora, under the question of who gets to decide what is reasonable care. Who gets to decide, should it be the judge or should it be the jury? Goodman and Pecora are two interesting cases. They're exactly the same. Goodman, decided by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Judge decided he'd seen many, many of these cases and he knew what reasonable care was. Comes along later, Pecora, and Judge Cardozo was forced to back down from this rigid standard made into a rule and said, you know what? Juries can make this decision. Juries are wise and they're the best ones to look at the case. Let's keep this flexible, avoid making rules, and go on the facts, send them to the jury. Over and over again, judges attempt to make the rules, and as I said in class, whenever judges try to make rules, they're always make standards into rules, they're always forced to back down. So the next class, we're going to start with the note case, Akins, on page 64, Akins and Andrews case are twin cases. Look at them like Goodman and Pecora. Contrast Akins v. Andrews. Who gets to decide what's reasonable care?